From scratch.
Welcome to the From Scratch podcast. I'm Martin Cousins and...
I'm Nigel Payne.
So this is part two of Nigel's incarceration story. Nigel, do you want to just give us a... For those of listeners who haven't heard the first part, can you just give us a little recap of your context and then just tell us how you're doing now that you're well into your second week in your hotel room?
Yeah, just two or three days to go now, which is a relief. Let's give you some context. Imagine flying for 25 hours in a plane, arriving at an airport, being taken off the plane in very small numbers, hardly anyone on the plane, and being kept 6 feet from the passenger in front and the passenger behind, being processed through an airport in an endless, circling, circuitous route, being asked again and again, do you have any COVID symptoms? What's your name? Don't touch anything. Show us your, place your passport on this Perspex screen so we can photograph it. Do you see these forms? Do you understand them? Sign them. Don't give them back. Put them on the Perspex screen. Let us photograph them. So you go through that wonderful process of people being so clearly not pleased to see you, then through passport control. And you eventually get out into baggage and you wait in a queue. And then eventually you're led out onto the tarmac and a bus is waiting. And you get on the bus, police car, special little flashing light truck in front because you're on the tarmac, police car, bus, out of the airport, to a hotel. So we arrived in the dark, arrive in the hotel in the dark, wait forever to be let off one at a time from the bus. Don't touch anything. Just take your baggage. Don't let anyone else touch it. Process through the hotel, check in, back again. Do you have any COVID symptoms? Passport against the Perspex, form here, form there. And there we are officially taken into, not custody, but something close. It's called taken into detention. So we're in legal detention. We're then taken up to a room and the door is open for us because we can't touch anything. And the guy says, see you in 2 weeks. Door closes. And therefore, you have no chance to recover from jet lag. You have not seen daylight. You have hardly had any fresh air. And that is the beginning of your 2 weeks. And the door on your room only opens three times a day when you are allowed to open it to collect a bag of breakfast, a bag of lunch, or a bag of dinner, and to take your COVID tests. So it's been, to say it's been hard is an understatement. It is very, very taxing having to live in a world where you can't see light because our room faces on a wall. So I can't see the sky and I can't even tell really whether it's day or night. Everything is in a gloom. There's no light really coming into the room. And you progress like that. And because you don't get a chance to get out, stretch your legs, recover from jet lag, the jet lag just goes on endlessly. And it's pretty close to being over now. I feel much better than I did 10 days in. But I had about, which is unknown for me, about 6 or 7 days of feeling just the way you do when you get off a plane after a 25-hour flight, your head all fuggy, unable to focus, feeling really sick and just floppy, basically. You know, you just can't raise your energy. So now I suppose I've become acculturated and I'm ready to leave. And there is an end in sight. Providing if we fail any of the COVID tests, which would mean that we actually caught it from the hotel, not from we didn't bring it, it was given to us, then we have another 10 days or 14 days of joy. So I'm just praying that that doesn't happen. So we escape into the fresh air on the morning of Wednesday, which is Tuesday evening, UK, and we begin our life. Coincidental with our arrival, there have been 6 COVID cases in Victoria. That is very serious. So they have locked the entire state down, closed the borders, and no one is allowed out of their house apart from half an hour's exercise and for essential foodstuffs or to see a doctor or something like that. So we go from one form of lockdown to another form of lockdown. But this lockdown is actually in a place with daylight and can walk and get out in the air and all that. So I'm actually not worried about that at all. But I'm just worried that Australia is in a pretty bad state at the moment, some of the states are in a bad state, and how they're going to deal with it. And just locking everything down, it does help, but I don't know. The policy of eliminating COVID with the Delta variant looks very shaky indeed. And the whole thing started in Victoria because some removalists started in country New South Wales, drove into Sydney, collected stuff, drove down through into Victoria and then on to South Australia. Two of them, of the three, weren't feeling very well. None of them wore masks and they walked in and out of people's houses and spreading COVID everywhere they went, basically. So there's a trail attached to them that spreads right the way through, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles of East Coast Australia. And where they go, others go. There was a football match in the MCG between Geelong and Carlton, and that has become a super spreading event because there were people there, no one had a mask on. And one or two people with COVID spread it to, you know, tens and 20. So we're talking about small numbers. I saw the British figures. Is it 56,000 cases yesterday? A modest number compared to five. And we are opening up a mere 56,000. Why wouldn't you open up the whole country to Australia closing down with five cases? So it's a totally different philosophy, completely different philosophy. And I'm just nervous that it's not, elimination doesn't work. And the only alternative is to vaccinate everyone. And Australia is still performing worse than Mexico. It's better than India, but it's performing. So it's way, if you look at the list of COVID vaccinated countries, UK is up there with Canada and Israel. I think nearly 70% of people are double vaccinated and, you know, 95 are single vaccinated. Australia is down below 10% of it still. And they have trouble, they're having trouble sourcing vaccines. And they've made such a fuss about AstraZeneca, saying it's good, no, it's bad, it's only for young people, no, it's not for young people, only for old people, no, not necessarily for old people. Now, because of the panic, they're saying anyone can get AstraZeneca, all you have to do is ask your doctor. So there's a lot of confused messages, which means that essentially the population as a whole don't trust AstraZeneca and have the perception that they can eliminate COVID. So then why do I need AstraZeneca? That's slightly worrying too, because I think the only solution is to go hell for leather for vaccination and with a policy of modest containment, but a realistic policy that doesn't see elimination as a possibility. Because Victoria had gone for 2 or 3 months without a single case before the Delta variant got in. But the Delta variant is a different kettle of fish compared to the others in terms of, not in terms of the severity of what it gives you, but in terms of its ability to transmit. It's much more virulent as a variant.
And what, how have you coped then in this
good question,
confinement that you describe?
It's a very good question.
What have you done to get through it?
One of the things that people said is have a very, very tight routine. You know, just plan your day meticulously. We haven't done that because how you plan your day is dependent on how you feel. And there's no point in saying every day at 10 o'clock, I'm going to do some exercise if you feel like death at 10 o'clock. So we've mixed the day between working. I've had to write stuff, which I've found very, very, very difficult and haven't done very well. But I have been doing proofreading. Second edition of my book comes out soon, so I'm doing the proofs of that. That's okay. I can cope with proofreading. And I've nearly finished the book and just coping with, you know, the general run-of-the-mill stuff. But I also had a pen course to be part of. So sadly, that was a 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. stint for 5 days. So I managed that. And it sounds horrific, but it wasn't really, because I was 3 o'clock every morning, I was wide awake. So getting up at 3 was not a problem. I was pretty tired by 7, and I'd go back to bed for a couple of hours. So you have this really confusing day, but I made sure every day I tried to sleep a decent sleep, even if it was made up of bits. two, decent exercise. So the target is 40 minutes a day. Three, walking. So I now do between 2 and 3 kilometer walk in my room, which is mind numbing. I don't even know how I could even do it, but I do it. So I just literally walk round and round the room for 3 kilometers. And I listen to stuff, you know, so I listen to podcasts and I listen to Apple's going for a walk. They have this podcast where people go on a walk and talk about their life. So I go on a walk and listen to that life. That's pretty good. And just work, and then pace that with work and pace that with meals, and try not to eat too much. Because, you know, if we ate everything that came through the door, it's not true to say most, some of which is absolute garbage, you know, full of sugar and full of calories. We would be, you know, I'd be talking to you with cheeks out here somewhere. So we only eat about half the food and the rest just gets thrown away. So the food pile of thrown away food, it's unbelievable. It's kind of criminal, but never mind. So we try and eat well, eat regularly. We bought in some salads. We had them delivered. So we eat sensibly and then have some entertainment. So we're watching an ABC series about a group of inmates in a mental facility, which is excellent, really very good. We're on the last episode tonight. And keep track of the news. So just trying to be plugged, because you're so shut off here. The whole world could have been wiped out apart from this room, and then we'd never have known. I suppose we would, because the food would cease to arrive. But it's very, very isolating. And just talking to the family, I'm talking to my grandchildren in real time. So instead of being there late, me early, or vice versa, it's in their time. So that's quite good. And they've really enjoyed that. And they can phone anytime. So they have preference, apart from teaching or doing something important. They just take over. So we drop everything for the kids. And that's been helpful as well. Mm-hmm. And just generally lots of WhatsApp, lots of trying to stay in touch and let the days go. And they do go. I don't find they drag. I find the total time drags. You know, like every day you wake up and think, we're nearly there. Oh, no, another 4 days. Oh, no. It feels like that. But the days themselves, because there's so much mixed stuff, go quite quickly. And I've got a psychologist who's on the team. They've got a lot of psychological backup people, because I'm sure there are those who go totally crazy in these 2 weeks. I was talking to him, and I really like him. And he phoned me back today. So I had my second talk with him. And I said, you know, as a professional, you have an absolute duty to research this, to work out what really is going on and be honest about it and what would be necessary to make some of the major problems and issues go away. You have a duty. And if you can't put that out into the, you know, the public domain, official public domain, you can put it in academic journals. You can frame it as case studies and research data, but you have a duty to do that, because you know this is just awful. So he obviously is not going to say that, but I think he does realize that it is awful, and that we've had problems. You know, my wife has had more problems than me. I thought at one point she was clinically depressed. She couldn't get off the bed. I was really scared for a couple of days, because it just, like, the whole world was closing in. But she's a little bit better. I think she's found it tougher than I have. But we have a duty, I think, to tell the world that there are ways you can avoid this kind of the horribleness of this. And it wouldn't take much, you know, like a planned 2 weeks where you get out on a regular basis. You're given, maybe after you've taken your first COVID test, even though you take a COVID test to get on the plane and that's negative, then to have you out on some escorted outdoors so you can walk and exercise and feel some air to try and help get over the jet lag, and some planning, you know, to midpoint, you know, have another, you know, another exercise getting out, and then towards the end, you know, to prepare people for leaving, instead of this awful slam the door and see you in 2 weeks attitude. And basically, unless you scream, you get nothing. And I'm sure there are people suffering quietly. They don't even know that half of it, but I'm sure there are also some serious cases of psychological damage. I also would like to know what the cognitive impairment is of locking people in a room. I remember when the UK started putting old people in the care homes, locking them in their rooms to protect them. And when they eventually opened the rooms up after 5 or 6 weeks, they found massive cognitive decline. because people are just sitting in a room. And I just wonder if there's something similar, they can track that. They could do the research, because in some ways this is a petri dish. This is a massive experiment with thousands of people being confined. I would really like them to do some, at least, you know, if you feel if they did some serious research, we learnt a lot about what people can cope with and what they can't, there'd be some good coming of it. But I fear they won't learn lessons, because this is political in a sense. It's not psychological and social and health based. It's based on the kind of lie that we will keep Victoria safe by incarcerating all these terrible outsiders who bring disease into the country. And the reality is not like that at all. I think I'm far, far more danger in this place, surrounded by, you know, God knows what, than I would be out the danger to the public out there. I've now taken 4 COVID tests. So that it is, the whole thing feels absurd. And it feels like, you know, it's just a kind of tokenism in a way, that if we are locked up for 14 days, then no one's to blame if anything goes wrong somewhere at some point. Whereas if they let us out, which is what I would do, you know, if you are double inoculated and have 2 negative COVID tests, they can let you out after 7 days and send you home. They could say, go home and isolate. If you're not prepared to do that, we won't let you out. And you have to take 2 further COVID tests. Then I think it would, I think that would be a far more sensible way of dealing with it. So you focus on the maximum, the areas where there are maximum problems, not the areas where there are minimum problems. Yeah. Everyone's treated the same. It's a strange experience, but it's not been pleasant, I have to say, in any way pleasant. Very few moments to smile.
No, absolutely. It sounds horrendous. It's not. It may be an experiment, but you're not a willing participant. No. And it's not been it's been an unpleasant experience. I'm just delighted that there's only a couple of days to go for you, and that you're able to have kind of, you know, nearly got there, and hopefully you and your other half will get, you know, will be out the door as soon as you can be, and you haven't got a COVID test that tells you otherwise.
That's a scary thing.
Well, look, thank you for giving us this update. I think as we said previously, we're hoping to publish this at some point, aren't we? I think there might be some issues around what you're allowed to say when, because it's a part of your incarceration that maybe you can't speak. So this will be delayed in publication. If you're listening, so just for the listeners, this is what's happened here. You know, we're doing this because we're really interested to know how it's been for Nigel, and we're going to also publish it so there's no negative impact on you either as a result of doing that. So we just need to be clear about when it gets published, which will be after you've left. So it's definitely a moment, it's sort of postcard from a moment in time, isn't it? But we appreciate you doing this, and we're able to share some of this on the podcast. So good luck with the next couple of days.
Thank you. Postcards from the Edge, I think we'll call it. And the Edge being the edge of sanity. Yeah. Thank you, Martin. All good. Yeah. From scratch.